Sit down. Thank you. Thank you all. I'm tempted to make some comments about being Lieutenant Governor, but don't do it. All right, I won't make any, but thank you, Madam Lieutenant Governor, for your introduction, and thank you, Mr. Speaker, for welcoming Jen and me to your house, and Madam Pro Tem, members of the legislature, fellow Californians, thank you once again for the privilege of this podium. Traditionally, this is where governors stand before you and report with practiced grandiosity that the state of our state is strong and getting stronger. And largely, that is still true. And yes, Eleni, proudly, we still are America's coming attraction. By any standard and by nearly every recognizable metric, the state of California is not just thriving, but in many instances, leading the country, inventing the future, and inspiring the nation. We remain the fifth largest economy in the world, enjoying 118 consecutive months of net job growth. Some 3.4 million jobs have been created since the Great Recession, and 4 million small businesses call California their home. More than half of all U.S. venture capital still flows to California companies. And we've averaged 3.8% GDP growth over 5 years. And I say this respectfully, compare that to the 2.5% national GDP growth. California is outperforming. I love saying about the state today, it's an enterprising, modernizing, pluralizing, unionizing nation state of opportunity. Just to underscore the point, consider that one in seven new American jobs added to our economy just since 2010 have been created right here in the state of California. So respectfully, when you hear the boasts, the bleats, the tweets of Washington politicians tripping over themselves to take credit for the economy, remember the real VIPs of Americans' GDP, and that's the millions of California workers and investors and entrepreneurs who are actually producing their own California dreams. Working together, we built record reserves, including the largest rainy day fund in state history. We've achieved the highest credit rating in nearly two decades, and we've disappeared the infamous wall of debt following the prudent principle of never spending more money than we take in. Simply put, California is the rocket fuel powering America's resurgence that, let me be clear, began under the leadership of President Barack Obama. Forgive me. I just needed to get that out. Want to be clear about that. I say lovingly, respectfully, needs to be said. Don't worry, I'm not going to get much more partisan than that. I said much more partisan than that. But even so, California never stands still and it never rests on its laurels. You know, last year, this is the speaker's spirit, last year we worked in historic partnership to achieve historic progress. Together we addressed some of the most stubborn issues and built brighter futures for millions and millions of Californians. Those achievements cannot be fully appreciated as line items in a budget or bill numbers that cross a desk. We see it in the faces of dreamers and doers all across our remarkable state, and in the patients who have new affordable access to primary care provided by doctors who look like them, that know their culture, speak their language, and understand their story. In the first responders putting badges on uniforms and their lives on the line, knowing that now California has the best and best resourced wildfire programs. In the working parent with more money in her pocket thanks to expanded paid family leave. $1,000 family tax credit and lower costs due to tax-free diapers and tampons. And the high school student who's planning a more promising future with 2 free years of community college. And the college athletes will finally have the opportunity to be justly compensated for their own name, image, and likeness. One bill, you change the rules. And in the Central Valley, it's finally getting the economic attention it deserves. And in communities, finally getting safe and clean drinking water. And in neighborhoods that are breathing just a little bit easier thanks to California's landmark partnership with leading automakers. And if voters approve it, we may soon see more school buildings newly free of lead and toxic mold thanks to a bipartisan state school bond. In city after city, household after household, the hard work of this legislature is making dreams more real for more Californians than ever before. You know, when Justice Brandeis wrote in 1932 that a single courageous state may serve as a laboratory of democracy, he could easily have been referencing California today. But because unlike the Washington plutocracy, California isn't satisfied servicing a powerful few on one side of the velvet rope. No, the California dream is for all. And to that end, just think about this. There are 1.6 million fewer Californians today living in poverty than there were in 2011. That's 1/4 of the nation's decrease in just this state alone. No amount of progress can camouflage the most pernicious crisis, though, in our midst. And that's the ultimate manifestation of poverty, homelessness. And that's why I'm devoting today's remark to this crisis. Let's call it what it is. It's a disgrace that the richest state and the richest nation succeeding across so many sectors is falling so far behind to properly house, heal, and humanely treat so many of its own people. Every day, the California dream is dimmed by the wrenching reality of families, of children, and seniors living unfed on a concrete bed. Military veterans who wore the uniform of our country in a foreign land, abandoned here at home. LGBTQ youth fleeing abuse and rejection from their families and communities. Faces of despair failed by our country's leaders and our nation's institutions. As Californians, we pride ourselves on our unwavering sense of compassion and justice for humankind. But there's nothing compassionate about allowing fellow Californians to live on the streets, huddled in cars or makeshift encampments. There's nothing just as well about sidewalks and street corners that aren't safe and clean for everybody. The problem has persisted for decades, caused by massive failures in our mental health system, disinvestment in our social safety net, exacerbated by widening income inequality and California's housing shortage. The hard truth is for too long we've ignored this problem. We turned away when it wasn't our sister, our brother, our neighbor, or our friend. And when it was a loved one, help so often wasn't there. Look, most of us have experienced homelessness as a pang of guilt, not a call to action. You know, back in 2005 is when we did that first point in time count. There were over 188,000 people that were deemed homeless in the state of California, 188,000 in that first point in time account. That's 35,000 more than we have today. And even at that peak, the state did not treat the issue with the urgency required. Since then, it's almost become normalized, right? Concentrated over years in skid rows and tent cities and in big urban centers. But now, it's no longer isolated. In fact, some of the most troubling increases have occurred in rural areas, in small towns and remote parts of our state. No place is immune. No person is untouched. And too often, no one even wants to take responsibility. I even heard a local official just recently proclaim, said loudly, "Not my problem." Servants of the public that are too damn busy pointing fingers to step up and help. That's shameful. After all, every homeless Californian, it is shameful. Every homeless Californian living on the boulevard of broken dreams is a casualty of institutional failures, person who's fallen through every possible hole in the safety net. Look, homelessness impacts everyone, but not equally. Some communities have been hit much harder. Urban renewal and gentrification broke up communities of color and throttled their abilities to move into the middle class. These are systemic issues rooted in poverty and racial discrimination. Black Californians. Black Californians comprise 8% of LA County's population, but 42% of its homeless. A recent poll found that nearly one half, one of every two Latinos in the state, are afraid that they or a family member could become homeless. The state of California can no longer treat homelessness and housing insecurity as someone else's problem, buried below, you know, other priorities that are much easier to win or better suited for sound bites. It's our responsibility, and it must be the top of our agenda. Appreciate it. So let's talk about this. The crisis was not created overnight, and it's not going to be solved overnight or even in a year. But as a state, we must do everything we can to ensure that no California is homeless. We've got to replace California's scattered shot approach with a more focused crisis level response. So in order to meet this moment with the commitment it demands, we're committed to advancing a new framework. Number one, we will reduce street homelessness quickly and humanely through emergency actions. We will be laser focused on getting the mentally ill out of tents and into treatment. We will provide stable funding to get sustainable results. And we will tackle the underproduction of affordable housing in California. And we will do all of this. We'll do all of this with real accountability and real consequences. So let's talk about what we started with. First, we started with emergency actions to do everything we can now to make an immediate, tangible impact. After decades of neglect and inadequate responses, we're putting our entire state government on notice to respond with urgency. Last month, I issued an executive order deploying emergency housing trailers and services for homeless families and seniors. These first trailers have been deployed in Oakland and LA County. The next group of trailers, I'm pleased to announce today, are headed, as we speak, to Santa Clara, Riverside, Contra Costa, Sonoma counties, and the city of Stockton. That same executive order builds on our work last year to identify all excess state land. Today, we are making 286 state properties, vacant lots, fairgrounds, armories, and other state buildings to be used by local governments for free for homeless solutions. Those are available today. Lease templates are ready to go, and we're ready for partnerships. Let's move on those. Today, in addition to that, we've also directed Caltrans to make better use of other unoccupied spaces to get homeless housing up as fast as possible. Look, we have great examples. We have great examples under development in that space already in San Francisco, Oakland, San Jose, and Los Angeles. And we're able to move faster than ever before on these leases and these land transfers because we've established a new strike team across agencies and state government, health and human service agencies, Caltrans, CHP, all with one goal, and that's to break through bureaucratic barriers. So as the state moves fast, we also have to move together with cities and counties who are by definition critical allies in addressing this emergency. 2 months ago, we issued a 100-day challenge to our local partners to focus on one part of their homeless population and address it with intentionality. Dozens of communities, I'm proud to say, across the state are stepping up. But as we continue these emergency actions, we also have to eliminate all these roadblocks to housing and shelter. Last year, because of your leadership, I was very proud to sign two important bills. One, streamlined the permitting process for navigation centers statewide. And the second, exempted all shelters and homeless housing from environmental review in our most populous city, Los Angeles. This year, I hope that we can expand by working together to expand this law and extend it to all homeless shelters in support of housing statewide.
You're listening to State of the State, addressed by Governor Newsom on 89.3 KPECC Pasadena, 89.1 KUOR Redlands, 90.3 KVLA Coachella, and 89.5 KJAI Ojai.
On these innovative approaches. And while we take emergency measures to increase shelter and services, we must also comprehensively address the hardest part of this problem. That's the chronically homeless. Those are folks out on the streets and sidewalks for over a year with complex behavioral health issues. For centuries, the default treatment was confinement in asylums, where people deteriorated out of sight. In the 1940s and in the 1950s, our nation began the trend towards deinstitutionalization. It was not a single policy, it was a series of policies. Outrage over conditions and institutions, as well as the creation of new medications like Thorazine and lithium, helped treat the mentally ill, and it sparked a movement to treat people in their communities rather than locking them away. California passed the Short Doyle Act in 1957 to fund community mental health services. Federal government, too, pushed this worthy cause forward as well. President Kennedy envisioned a system in which, in his words, the reliance on the cold mercy of custodial isolation will be supplemented, he said, by the open warmth of community concern. State mental hospitals were closed, but the promise of community mental health was never fully realized. States were burdened now with the responsibility, but provided little in the way of support. Laws were changed that made it harder to compel mental health treatment as well. Then Governor Ronald Reagan signed the Lanterman-Petras Short Act in 1967, designed to end the inappropriate lifetime commitment of people with mental illness. And critically, often forgotten, in 1975, the U.S. Supreme Court decision, O'Connor versus Donaldson, ruled that mental illness alone cannot justify a state locking a person up against his will. All of these changes coincided with safety net cuts, block grants, and tightened eligibility standards in the 1980s and 1990s, along with the wholesale raising of skid rows and SROs, which for so many was the only housing option they could afford. The cumulative impact made county jails the de facto mental health institutions. Patients and their families were left with inadequate options to get the mental health care that they needed. And in a politically polarized world, liberals and conservatives blame one another for these failures. Historically speaking, though, both are right. It's time to stop pointing fingers and join hands in a transformational solution. So let's talk about that. This year we have proposed CalAIM. It's a once-in-a-lifetime reform of our Medi-Cal system based on the obvious, long-ignored principle that physical health and brain health are inextricably linked. After all, 10 million Californians, one in four suffer from some type of behavioral health condition. This is not a narrow issue, nor a new one. The deeper truth is that our healthcare system, though, has been designed to treat some of our parts, not the sum of our parts. And that must change. This landmark proposal calls for leveraging Medi-Cal as a tool to help California's most vulnerable residents, the homeless, our children, and people cycling in and out of the criminal justice system. It's about integrating care, targeting social determinants of health, and expanding our whole person care pilots statewide. Healthcare and housing can no longer be divorced. After all, what's more fundamental to a person's well-being than a roof over their head? Doctors should be able to write prescriptions for housing the same way they do for insulin and antibiotics. Why not? That's the aim of CalAIM, transforming our Medi-Cal system as we know it, and we backed it up with a $695 million budget request to make it real this year. Now, of course, all of this relies and hinges on an individual being capable of accepting help to get off the streets and into treatment in the first place. Some, as we know, tragically are not. That's why we need better legal tools, ones that allow local government, health providers, and law enforcement to more effectively help people access treatment they need. California's behavioral health laws may have been ahead of their time, but today they call out for reform. We must tailor these policies to reflect the realities of street homelessness today, which is so different than it was 50 years ago or even 15 years ago when these laws were enacted. And while we've made progress on limited and general conservatorships last year, further improvements, from my perspective, are warranted. And all within the bounds of deep respect, always for civil liberties and personal freedoms, but with an equal emphasis on helping people into the life-saving treatment they need at the precise moment they need it. Look. Clearly, it is time to respond to the concerns of experts who agree that thresholds for conservatorships are too high and need to be revisited. Take Laura's Law, which allows loved ones and service providers to ask courts to compel those who need treatment into community-based outpatient care. The problem is, it's too hard to use. We need to remove some of the conditions imposed on the counties trying to implement the law so they can expand who benefits. And with housing conservatorships, we need to authorize counties throughout the state to establish these programs like the one that was recently developed in San Francisco. Look, that said, not naive about this, that said, we know that the most urgent issue is not the legal inability to conserve people, but the unavailability of housing and care for those who most need it. I recognize policy is an empty promise without creating more placements. And one clear opportunity to do this is by reforming Proposition 63, the Mental Health Service Act. As written, its author is standing up. As written, its resources often don't reach the people who need it the most. We're not proposing changing the funding formula for how much each county gets. Rather, reform must focus the funding on street homelessness, at-risk and foster youth, and those involved in the criminal justice system. And we need to expand the kinds of services it can pay for, specifically addiction treatment. And we also need to stop, respectfully, we need to stop tolerating open drug use on our streets. Additionally, we should compel counties to spend more of what they've got by lowering the 33% reserve threshold that they're allowed to hold back. Get this. This is interesting. Even with the current threshold, 40 out of 58 counties are above that line. That's over $160 million unspent that could go to get people off the street and into treatment. So my message is this: spend your mental health dollars by June 30th of this year, or we'll make sure those dollars get spent for you. That's $160 million today. We got to get serious about this stuff. Look, you guys get it. It's about accountability, matching resources to results. For too long, there were no requirements for progress. This higher system's been voluntary. I want to thank my Council of Homeless Advisors for bringing consequences to the forefront of this discussion. It's time to match our big-hearted empathy with tight-fisted accountability. In just the last 2 years, because of your leadership, the last 2 years, $1.5 billion has been allocated to help local governments solve homelessness. Now, this includes $650 million emergency homeless aid that you recently approved. And up until now, state aid has been block granted to local governments by formula. Spending decisions have been relatively unrestricted and locally driven. But respectfully, the problem's gotten worse. And the results, they speak for themselves. This moment, it cries out for a new approach. And in the budget I just submitted, I proposed a new approach, a new California Access to Housing Fund, and with it, a whole new way of investing in homeless solutions. We have a clear purpose for this fund: paying for what works, gap financing for innovative housing models like hotel-motel conversions, and securing vacant units wherever we can find them, stabilizing and expanding board and care homes, preventing homelessness in the first place through rent subsidies and rapid rehousing to help people one job lost, one illness away from homelessness. With this nation's first statewide housing fund, we can start braiding together state and philanthropic dollars, as well as health care, mental health, and social services, paying for housing but not overhead by capping the administrative cost of the funds at just 10%. That's important. Whole idea is to be nimble and flexible and to evolve from best practices to next practices, and always with an eye on deep regional coordination and clear metrics: number of new leases signed, number of new housing units converted or built, number of people stabilized with rent subsidies, number of people moved off the streets. So to get us started, I'm asking this legislature to invest an unprecedented $750 million to get this fund up and running. Based on the severity of the crisis, we need early legislative action to set up the legal authorities to enter into the contracts and service providers now. And that's why I'm asking you not to wait months, because we don't have months. The public's lost patience. I know you've lost patience. I've lost patience. In order to reverse decades of neglect, in order to turn things around, though, a crisis this deep-rooted, we're also going to need more than just one-time funding. We're going to need significant, sustainable revenue. It's the truth. I know this is always the toughest thing. So in the next few months, look, I pledge to work with all of you closely to identify where this ongoing revenue will come from. But we've got to find it to provide safer, cleaner streets the communities that we represent deserve. It's time to muster the political will to meet this moment. People of California, you know this, are demanding bold, permanent solutions. Anything less is not going to get the job done. In order to, though, get the job done, we've got to match this new money with a new legal obligation to address the crisis head on, requiring that any new funding isn't replacing existing spending, but creating new solutions. Some have recommended a legal right to shelter. I know it's a provocative idea, which has forced this state to explore the limits of what local governments can be compelled to do. But right now, our imperative, I believe, must be about bringing governments together as working partners, not sparring partners in a court of law. So instead, we are proposing strict accountability, comprehensive audits, and a do-it-or-lose-it policy to hold local governments responsible for results. Take action, or you're going to lose the new funding. In order to track the progress, we're committed to developing and establishing a unified homelessness data system to capture accurate local information. Because at the end of the day, y'all know this, you can't manage what you don't measure. It is time. It's time for the failed policy of not my problem to be replaced with one of shared responsibility across every sector and every community. Now look, I'm not naive. Not one city, not one county, not even one state can shoulder this responsibility alone. This is a national crisis. Federal decision-making contributed to this moment. And our federal government has an obligation to match its rhetoric with specific, constructive, and deliverable results. California has, and will continue to extend its hand of partnership to Washington, seeking to jointly address this issue. Honestly, this partnership should be a given. But empty words and symbolic gestures won't mask a 15% across-the-board cut to HUD's budget. I'm old enough, many of you are in this room as well, I'm old enough to remember when HUD was in the housing business, and I'm hopeful one day they will be again. Look, after all, homelessness isn't a blue or red issue. It's an everyone issue. It's a blight on the soul of America. But of course, the fundamental building block of California's solution has to be more housing. A comprehensive response to our collective failure just simply not to build enough. You know, we don't build housing for people at all income levels, and as a consequence, we've worsened the homeless crisis. It's a vicious cycle, and we own it. The only sustainable way out of it is to massively increase housing production in the state of California. It's the only way out. We at least all agree on that. So, you know, let's match our courage on homelessness with our courage on housing supply. Look, last year we made a new and historic investment, about $1.75 billion, to boost production. It was part of the $7 plus billion you all approved on affordable housing. We secured new judicial penalties against cities that don't zone, plan, and, you know, do their fair share to get housing. We protected tenants like never before. Finally, outlawing discrimination against people that have housing vouchers. We created a permanent fund to provide legal assistance to at-risk tenants. And historically, we worked together to crack down on rent spikes and unjust evictions, passing the nation's strongest statewide renter protections. That was a big deal, folks. It was a big deal. And thanks to your leadership, last year I was privileged to sign 18 bills to boost housing production. But time and time again, bigger, bolder reform hasn't happened. In part, because of concerns that are not make-believe. You know, many of our lowest income residents understandably worry about being pushed out of their own communities because of gentrification. Middle-class homeowners, they worry about their single-family home losing its value. It's a scary prospect, given the house is often the family's biggest asset. Those are real concerns, and they should not be brushed aside. At the same time, we also know that the status quo is simply unacceptable. We're not building enough housing. Look, I get cities need to meet their housing goals in a way that matches their community, but doing nothing is no longer an option. It can't be. As a former mayor, look, I respect local control, but not at the cost of creating a two California class system, not at the cost of imperiling the California dream, and that's what we're doing. It cannot be at the cost. It's what's happening. We have to wake up to this reality. Got to step up our game. We got to grow communities so people can live, work, thrive, spending more time with their families, less time in traffic. All right? So this means a commitment right now, this year, to major reform that will eliminate red tape and delays for building critically needed housing, like affordable multifamily homes, especially near transit and downtowns. I am committed. I'm committed to working with the leaders of both the Senate and the Assembly to craft and pass these needed reforms. Our objectives are clear: increase density in a way that promotes equity, affordability, and inclusion. To increase certainty that units planned become units built in a way that respects always our environmental and labor protections, and to hold local governments accountable to both of these pillars, more density and more certainty. It is time for California to say yes to housing. We can no longer wait. So this is the challenge before us. And those are tough choices, but we got to make them. Overcoming adversity and tackling intractable problems are as ingrained in California's character as our sun-kissed coast and our breadbasket valley. With homelessness, I also know that it can be done. because I've seen success along the way. You know, 15 years ago, when I was mayor of San Francisco, in the face of long odds and stiff opposition, we established Project Homeless Connect to bring local government services directly to the people. It has been wildly successful and adopted in over now 250 cities across our nation. Last year, I went back to Homeless Connect and I spoke with a man by the name of Richard Oliva. 4 years ago, Richard was homeless, drug addicted, and seeking medical help at one of Connect's neighborhood fairs. Thanks to this program, Richard got clean, he obtained disability support, and he ultimately moved into subsidized permanent housing. This time he was back as a volunteer. For 3 years. For 3 years now, he's been back volunteering, passing out free reading glasses to people in need. While I was there, Richard hugged me with tears in his eyes, came up and said, "Thanks to this program, I now have a home of my own. I am proud that Richard made it up here today." Richard, would you stand? Richard's story reminds us there are no lost causes in our California community. It's his enduring California value that every Californian has value. So when critics tell you homelessness can't be solved, introducing people like Richard and thousands of others that are living testament that it can. I don't think homelessness can be solved. I know that homelessness can be solved. This is our cause, it's our calling. Let's all rise to the challenge and make California stand up as an exemplar of what true courage and compassion can achieve. Let's all get to work. Thank you, guys.
Governor Gavin Newsom in his State of the State address in California and Sacramento before the state legislature, the speech lasting just about 35 minutes, 40 minutes or so. We have many highlights of the speech to talk about. We'll also speak with Los Angeles County Supervisor Mark Ridley Thomas, who co-chairs the Governor's Commission on Homelessness. We'll hear what he had to say about some of the proposals that are included in the Governor's State of the State address. You're listening to Air Talk on 89.3 KPCC. We'll be back in just a minute. Good morning. It's Air Talk. I'm Larry Mantle. Good to have you with us. We just heard live from Sacramento, Governor Gavin Newsom's second State of the State address, in which he took almost the entire time of the speech to focus on the state's homelessness crisis. He made the case that the state of California can no longer treat the homeless and the housing insecure as someone else's problem, buried below other priorities, easier to win, or better suited for sound bites. And the governor also talked about the history of housing discrimination, lack of housing production, and other structural barriers to housing keeping up in California. Also called for the California Environmental Quality Act to be set aside for cities that are building shelters for homeless residents of those cities. Los Angeles got a carve-out for its homeless shelters from CEQA. Now the governor proposing to extend that statewide. Joining us is Los Angeles Times Sacramento Bureau Chief John Myers. John, good morning. Thank you for being with us. Just starting with a couple of things that the governor raised in the speech. What stood out most to you?
I mean, I think, you know, first and foremost is the fact that he devoted the entire speech to one topic that, in my experience in two decades here in Sacramento, is not how governors do state of the state speeches. I mean, I think it shows the severity of the issue, the importance of the issue. I do think it's more of a call to arms, a lighting a fire, so to speak, under lawmakers, both those here at the state and those at the local level. Exactly how you get to that is going to be the hard work. I don't think the governor is oblivious to that, but you didn't see a particular singular path of saying, do it my way. He said, let's work together on a lot of things. He threw some ideas out there, but ultimately he knows this is going to be a collaboration.
Do you think it's going to be difficult to get the legislature to agree to a statewide carve-out for CEQA compliance for the shelters in cities as well as permanent sporting housing?
I think it would be hard to, you know, certainly there's, let's put it this way, Larry. I mean, certainly there are people who, in the environmental community who say, look, these rules are there for a reason, that we have environmental review for a reason so that we make sure we're not building in ways that are detrimental to these communities, to the health of these communities. That said, we've had carve-outs to CEQA, the California Environmental Quality Act, for sports stadiums, for other particular projects. I think it's hard to argue that you can't put more housing and homelessness crisis solutions in that category. I think the larger thing, though, is not so much the CEQA issue, is can you get people to agree on spending money over the long term and on ceding control to the state government in many ways that has largely been under the purview of local governments. I think that is a much larger challenge. Environmental issues are big, but I think control, who controls the money, is going to be a big deal moving forward.
Well, and I do think one of the differences, John, is that with the arenas, those are typically in commercial areas apart from residential neighborhoods, and that residents have seen in CEQA requirements an ability for them to be able to use courts to fight projects that they think are going to be detrimental to their neighborhood's quality of life. Without CEQA for those, again, LA already has that, but I could just see that being controversial in some cities.
I certainly think it could. I mean, and I think that there's a lot to be determined about that. But we've been talking about CEQA reform, as it would be called, for a very long time. It's a big subject. I think individual projects, project by project, is going to be an interesting discussion. But I, you know, would urge listeners to not focus on CEQA out of the speech. I don't think that's the takeaway. I think the takeaway is, can you have money and momentum on a variety of levels to do something to address the sheer numbers of people in Skid Row in Los Angeles and in cities like San Francisco and elsewhere, and how to help them?
So the governor talked about cities and counties where travel trailers could be established for homeless families, 286 parcels of state land identified for potential homeless housing. But as you mentioned, the governor, you know, for a speech like this, isn't going to get into the details of how you get the review of those state properties and where the funding comes from to develop them. Are there measures in the pipeline in Sacramento to try and bring some of these ideas to fruition?
Yeah, there are a number. I mean, I think first and foremost, there is an effort brewing, and we wrote about this in the newspaper today, to find a long-term source of funding for homelessness programs. You know, the governor has proposed in the budget he unveiled last month $750 million, but it's a one-time amount of money to set up a structure where the state would kind of dole out money to programs on the local level, both those that are done by local governments and those that might be done by nonprofits and other organizations. There's an effort underway to do more than that. I mean, there's at least one proposal that talks about as much as $2 billion a year, ongoing year after year, $2 billion and then another $2 billion and more after that, to deal with this issue. That's a tough sell because that money comes potentially at the expense of other state government programs. But then again, in addition to clearing red tape, as the governor talked about in the speech, really this is an issue of money and year after year focus. And I think that's a real challenge because so many people, counties and cities, law enforcement, and then, of course, the state through mental health programs and medical programs have a vested interest in trying to figure out how to meet the needs of this population that seems to be growing by the year.
One of the controversial things the governor calling for is lowering the bar for mandatory mental health treatment for individuals. This obviously a civil liberties issue versus safety of the individual.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, you heard the governor say in this that he respects the civil rights there and he respects, civil liberties, I should say, of those folks. I think really, Larry, again, the governor is saying we've got to tackle these problems. I think the speech was a list of what he thinks needs to be tackled, not necessarily how you tackle them. And that's really the challenge, is that we expect ultimately at some point that someone's got to take the lead on this. The governor has made it clear that he feels ownership over this issue. It's happening on his watch. He has been a mayor himself in San Francisco. But those details are going to matter. They are not small things. I know listeners will be familiar with the idea that we say the devil's in the details. Well, it really is. The details are going to matter how you move forward on these things. These are tricky topics, as you're pointing out. People feeling that sense of their civil liberties and their freedoms versus what's needed to be done to move people who have chronically been on the streets for many years. It's very tough.
All right. John, thank you so much. I know you got to get to writing about this. Really appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thank you.
John Myers, Sacramento Bureau Chief for the Los Angeles Times. We just heard the State of the State address live by Governor Gavin Newsom from the State Capitol building in Sacramento. I'd like to hear from you what you thought about what the governor said. We're at 866-893-KPECC. That's 866-893-5722. We welcome your thoughts. The governor said it's a disgrace that the rich state in the richest nation is falling so far behind to properly house, heal, and humanely treat so many of its own people. The governor pointed out that the homeless population in most states have recently declined, but in California, it's increased 16% in the last year to about 151,000 unhoused Californians. Joining us to respond to the governor's address is Los Angeles County Supervisor Mark Ridley Thomas. He's also co-chair of the Governor's Council of Regional Homeless Advisors. Mark Ridley Thomas, thank you for being with us.
Delighted to be here. Thank you.
Your response to the governor's priorities is laid out in the State of the State.
Well, I have to say this is the first time that I've heard a governor dedicate as much time to the matter of homelessness and affordability with respect to housing. I cannot recall a time over my length of service in public office, 3 decades, where this kind of push has been made. So I give Governor Newsom a big round of applause for owning the issue, not walking away from it, grappling with it, knowing that it's tough, and yet speaking the language of accountability and trying to advance solutions, and at the same time being willing to allocate resources to get us moving along the path that will provide relief to many people who are today homeless, divert those who are being moved from the streets into the criminal justice system. There was a lot there, and I simply want to say we need more of it, and we should pull together and make the things happen that the governor has indicated, critique the work as we move along. But, in fact, we need to move. This is a crisis of consequence. We need a comprehensive crisis response, and that's what the governor was seeking to.
Supervisor Ridley Thomas, one of the things the governor talked about is the money that's been allocated to counties to address their homelessness crises, that much of that money has not been spent. And the governor talking about, he said something like, if you don't spend it, we're going to spend it for you. Your response to that statement?
I support that, and I have advocated that position with the governor. Based on my role as co-chair of his Council on Homelessness for the state. And I think accountability means that the resources that have been allocated to counties throughout the state have to be properly, efficiently, and purposefully expended. And to the extent that they are not, there ought to be a clawback provision so that they are, in fact, properly utilized. That is fundamentally important if we're going to take seriously the state of emergency in which we find ourselves and address homelessness with the kind of intentionality that I think is required.
The governor also talked about an additional $750 million in one-time funding for the California Access to Housing Fund. The governor making the case that he was going to work with the legislature to find ongoing revenue for that project, proposing strict accountability and audits as well. That $750 million that's been set up that we're talking about, you know, going to local communities. What, in your view, has been the holdup to that money being spent?
Well, I think it has not been a sufficient priority, and the bureaucracies in various parts of the state haven't sufficiently engaged now with a leader who is saying you will perform or we're going to take these resources back. I can tell you that county after county will get in gear and do this work. It's long overdue, and the governor is simply saying talk is cheap. And he's putting his money where, I should say, the state's money, taxpayers' money, where his mouth is. He's not just talking. He's essentially allocating in three different pots. And he's essentially saying this is not one time only. I'm prepared to join hands with the legislature and find solutions for ongoing revenues, even to the extent that it may include raising taxes and the like. And so this governor is putting a lot on the line, and I have to tell you that I respect that.
Are you concerned about the governor talking about lowering the reserve limit on counties, Prop 63, mental health money, or do you think that there is a justification for lowering the reserve?
I think it's all in the context of accountability, transparency, and results. He's not offering these suggestions in an abstract sense. It has a history. It has a context. And what he is saying, this is urgent. We need to get moving. Whoever isn't prepared to get moving needs to get out of the way because the problem is worsening as we speak. And this is the kind of force of personality. This is the kind of intention with respect to policy coherence that the state of California desperately needs and has needed in order to take on this crisis in a way that we can begin to turn this most desperate set of circumstances around.
Now, voters passed Prop 63 to provide mental health services. The governor proposed expanding that to drug abuse treatment. You think that that is in alignment with what voters intended?
I have no doubt about it. Prop 63 and its author, principal author, is Mayor Daryl Steinberg, a colleague and co-chair of this governor's task force with me, has made it clear the intention was to relieve homelessness significantly. That's what Prop 63 was about. And to the extent that that allocation of resources has not done so, I think the governor and Mayor Steinberg, as well as the rest of us who see a need to use these resources well. This is what we're saying. Rather than raising taxes and doing a number of other things, we need to make sure that we're good stewards of the resources that are already available to us. And the fact of the matter is we haven't been as effective in utilizing what we have. And when we do that, I think the people of this state in all of its jurisdictions will respect the fact that we need to ask for more. But first, let's use what we have, use it well, use it smart, and show significant results.
Supervisor Mark Ridley-Thomas, thank you, sir, for talking with us and responding to the State of the State address. We appreciate it.
Indeed. Thank you.
Mark Ridley-Thomas, L.A. County Supervisor, representing the 2nd District. He also co-chairs Governor Newsom's Council of Regional Homeless Advisors. Talking about the State of the State address, which Governor Newsom concluded just a few minutes ago. You heard it live on 89.3 KPECC. Coming up, we'll talk about an L.A. City Council proposal to give priority status to LAX travelers in the TSA screening line if they use public transit. Want to hear what you think about that proposal? We'll talk with LA City Councilman Bob Blumenfield coming right up on Air Talk back in 90 seconds.